Welcome to Friday, March 21st. Welcome to State and Local Government Committee. The time is 12:35. Senator Gustafson has to be in for a couple of votes in Ag Committee, but we will change up the bill order a little bit. We will start off with my bills first. Senate File 2417, Department Admin, Technical Changes and Provision. We'll hand over the gavel to Senator May Quaid.
Senator Zhang, my power begins. I'm just kidding. You may introduce your bill and begin your testimony.
Thank you, members. Starting off first here, Senate File 2417 is the Department of Administration's bill to update and streamline their statutes. The bill makes a number of technical changes, including federal conformity with the Assistive Technology Act, as well as report streamlining and updates to clarify capital project notifications. I'll turn it over to Julie Bayer from the Department of Administration to provide more details to the committee.
Thank you. And Senator Zhang, do you want to move the A1 amendment?
Oh, yes. And so I would like to move the A1 amendment.
All right, Senator Zhang moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The A1 is adopted. I'm so sorry, I missed the testifier's name. Please introduce yourself for the record. You may begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Julie Byrell, and I'm the Legislative Director for the Department of Administration. Thank you to Senator Zhang for authoring and hearing Senate File 2417, which is Admin's technical policy bill. Admin provides a wide variety of services to state agencies and the public, and Senate File 2417 makes technical changes to our statutes and is our housekeeping bill. We proposed many of these changes last year, so some may be familiar, and I'll briefly summarize those proposed changes. First, we are updating the Assistive Technology Act. Admin administers the Assistive Technology Act in Minnesota through the STAR program, which is the System of Technology to Achieve Results. And they help Minnesotans with disabilities gain access to and acquire the assistive technology they need to thrive. The proposed updates change Minnesota's statute to comply with the changes made at the federal level. We're also asking to change the due date for the General Services Revolving Fund Rate Report. This is a report of the rates that admin charges for the General Services funds. Those are things like leases, workers' comp, mail, parking, et cetera. Currently, it's due July 1st, but admin is often still working with MMB to complete the review at that time. So we're asking to move it to September 15th to allow time for that review. We're also proposing to streamline the fleet reports. Admin currently completes two very similar reports on the goals to reduce fossil fuel use in fleet vehicles. We do one every year and one every other year. This change will combine the two reports to be included in the Office of Enterprise Sustainability's dashboard, which is updated annually and available online all the time. Additionally, we are asking to clarify which construction projects must provide notice to the legislature before proceeding. So agencies and local government construction projects must obtain recommendation from the legislature before work can begin. So they have to obtain recommendation. Some projects are exempt from this recommendation. For instance, demolition, hazardous material abatement, and parking lots. But statute requires all other capital projects to notify the legislature that they are ready to begin work, but they do not need to obtain recommendation or submit detailed documents. This change would clarify that projects that are exempt from the recommendation requirement must still notify the legislature that they're ready to begin, and it's a result of conversations between House and Senate Counsel and the Revisor's Office. Admin also requests to remove the requirement to maintain a model exterior lighting ordinance. Funding for this authority was never provided, and the agency has not had available funds to hire a subject matter expert. Example ordinances already exist in local communities and from other organizations who can better provide and consult on the issue. Finally, the bill adds the Office of Ombuds for Long-Term Care to the list of entities that are exempt from state markings on their vehicles. And this is something that the office brought to us last year and will help them better perform their investigations. That completes my summary, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bayerl. Members, questions or comments? And I'm just pausing just to make sure our online attendees don't have any questions. Okay. If there are no questions, Senate File 2517, excuse me, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Senator Zhang, you have another bill.
Yes. Thank you, members. Next up is Senate File 2578, the Grants Management Provisions Modifications. Is a Department of Admin's bill to ensure the grant-making statutes provide the best framework for grant makers across the state agency enterprise. The bill makes the following changes. First, it enables admin to proactively debar grantees who have been convicted of certain crimes but have not yet received the state grants. Second, the bill streamlines the timeline for grant denial appeals, so agencies can award to another grantee if their initial choice does not meet state standards. Third, it requires the grantee administrative costs, provided that grantee administrative costs are reasonable and necessary, which mirrors the federal standard. Finally, it clarifies the process for capital grants. This reflects current processes in the result of conversations with MMB and the nonprofit community. I'll turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Christensen from the Department of Administration to provide more details.
And Senator Zhang, before we go to Deputy Commissioner Christensen, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
I'm sorry, I'm skipping that from the beginning. Yes, okay. I would like to move the A1 amendment, please.
Senator Zhang moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Deputy Commissioner Christensen, introduce yourself for the record. You may begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I am Stacey Christensen, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Administration. The grants changes in this bill that Senator Zhang described are part of the governor's anti-fraud package and provide additional tools in the state's toolbox to prevent fraud in state government programs. First, the bill expands admin's authority to suspend or debar grantees to include potential grantees by clarifying that the definition of grantee includes a potential grantee. This is an effort to prevent entities who are not current grant holders but have engaged in or been convicted of debarment-worthy causes from becoming recipients of state-issued grants in the future. The causes for debarment include serious issues such as crimes like embezzlement, theft, bribery, falsification of records, and other serious convictions and violations. The bill also amends existing obligations on state employees to require a report of violations of grants, laws, or rules. Current law has mandatory reporting requirements in place for state employees related to all unlawful activity, and this change clarifies required reporting as related to violations specific to grants, laws, or rules. Next, the bill streamlines the grant denial appeal timeline. State agencies are currently required to perform a pre-award risk assessment on potential grantees prior to award decision on grants of $50,000 or more. If an agency has a concern during this risk assessment, there is a process outlined in statute for communicating with the grantee and to work out a plan to address concerns. If concerns cannot be satisfied, the agency has the authority to not award the grant and potentially award the grant to another entity. The bill addresses concerns related to delays in distributing grant funds to other eligible grantees while maintaining an opportunity to respond to concerns arising from the pre-award risk assessment. Additionally, good grants management requires adequate funding to cover administrative costs and overhead. Currently, the state requires grantees to minimize their administrative costs. Based on feedback from stakeholders, the bill modifies the requirement for grantees to keep administrative costs necessary and reasonable, which mirrors the federal requirements. Finally, the bill clarifies that general fund capital grants to nonprofits would follow regulations for capital projects under Chapter 16A. The 2023 bonding bills included many new capital grants to nonprofits funded by the general fund rather than bond dollars. This created confusion for agencies and nonprofits. The change reflects current practice and will ensure that all capital grants are under the same rules and requirements, regardless of funding source. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Christensen. Members, questions? Senator Curran.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Zong, for bringing this forward. And Ms. Christensen, I think between the legislative auditor and everybody's focus for the last 4 or 5 years on the grant programs, it looks like these are practical steps, could have been done a while ago. Glad they're here. And what we'd look forward to is the processes actually being adhered to, that we perform the functions and the oversight, because many of those weren't for lack of policies. We just didn't do the work. And so we appreciate the clarity and look forward to much better outcomes and oversight for the grants, that grant programs that we have, period, across the board. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Curran. Any other member questions? Senator Zhang, any closing remarks? And I apologize for not asking you that on your last bill.
Oh, it's okay, certainly. Thank you, Senator Curran, and with the department, and we're looking forward to seeing these move through and pass into law. And thank you for working with our office to get these bills here.
Thank you so much, Senator Zhang. And with that, Senate File 2578 as amended is laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. All right, Senator Zhang.
Yes, members, thank you. The last bill I have here for today is Senate File 2851, an MMB agency bill to update the due date for the budget reserve recommendation report, moving it from September to October 30th to allow for future timely submission. The volatility study that informs the report from MMB requires data from the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, which historically was available in August, but since 2022, the data has not been available until late September. And so leaving insufficient time to meet the current statutory deadline, the Bureau has informed MMB the September production timeline for the study should be expected going forward, leading to this request, moving the report due date from September to October will allow MMB to submit the report on time and still well in advance of the November budget and economic forecast. And with that, I have a testifier that can talk a little bit more about it.
Thank you, Senator Zhang. Please introduce yourself for the record. You may begin your testimony.
Thank you. Eric Anderson, Government Relations Director at Minnesota Management and Budget. I think Senator Zhang has described the bill well.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Mr. Erickson, Anderson? Erickson.
Anderson, yeah.
Anderson, thank you. I apologize. Members, any questions for Senator Zhang or the testifier? Okay, Senator Zhang, any closing remarks?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty straightforward bill, trying to meet the deadlines and give sufficient time. So looking forward to this bill moving forward.
Thank you so much. And with that, Senate File 2851 is laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. I don't think that's good.
All right. Next up, we have Senator McQuaid, your bill. Whenever you're ready, you may begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could move the A1 amendment.
Senator McQuaid moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate File 2600 requires state agencies to spend at least 50% of their advertising expenditures on local news organizations with an exemption for advertising that is primarily targeted for out-of-state residents. A free press is foundational to our country, and it's no secret that our newspapers are facing historic difficulties due to the rise of social media and technological disruption. There is a bigger policy conversation to be had in the coming months about supporting and preserving local journalism, but today I'm bringing forward a bill that would be a small step forward. My bill takes funding aimed at public awareness about critical state programs, public health initiatives, and resources available to help our constituents, and ensures we're using some of that to make meaningful investments in our local newspapers, broadcast stations, and digital news platforms at no additional cost to the state. From the Department of Health's Alzheimer's Public Information Program to the Department of Commerce's advertising of unclaimed property to state job openings, our agencies work really hard to keep Minnesotans informed on a wide variety of helpful topics. If we make sure that a good portion of our existing spending on that critical messaging is spent locally, we can also provide a needed boost to the local news organizations our constituents trust and look to for information. Journalism is a public good and a cornerstone of our democracy. We must look for ways to help sustain our local news organizations, and this bill can help. I want to thank my co-author on this bill, Senator Rasmussen, and I look forward to the conversations and from the testimony from my testifiers.
All right. To the first testifier, please state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Justin Lessman. I'm the publisher of the Jackson County Pilot Newspaper and Lakefield Standard Newspaper in Jackson County, Minnesota, and I also serve as the current president of the Minnesota Newspaper Association. Thank you for allowing me a few minutes today to urge your support for Senate File 2600, a budget-neutral piece of legislation that promises to both increase the effectiveness of government communication and make a real difference for Minnesota's 250 newspapers. Like many newspapers across the state, the Jackson County Pilot and the Lakefield Standard are the primary and preferred sources of information for the residents of our county. Study after study bears this fact out, including a recent survey of residents living in our local school district that found our newspapers and newspaper websites remain the most relied upon and most trusted sources of information, more than TV, more than social media, and more than any other online source out there. And a recent statewide readership survey study conducted by Coda Ventures, which likewise found newspapers and newspaper websites remain Minnesotans' most relied upon and most trusted sources of information. That said, it only makes sense for government agencies looking to communicate with residents via a relied upon, trusted, and preferred medium to utilize the state's wide-reaching network of newspapers. And the advertising revenue that would generate for newspapers, most of which are locally owned small businesses providing good paying jobs for hardworking Minnesotans, will go a long way toward helping secure the future of newspapers across the state, allowing us to retain and hire employees, cover the increasing costs of printing and postage, and weather the possibility of new 25% newsprint tariffs. Senate File 2600 makes use of dollars already set aside to be spent on advertising to help support local news and local businesses. This legislation will increase the effectiveness of government communication and help secure the future of the state's 250 newspapers, all at no additional cost to the state. It is truly a win-win. I urge you to support this bill. Thank you, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lessman. Next we have Lisa Hills. Please state your name for the record and you may begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Lisa Hills and I am the executive director of the Minnesota Newspaper Association. MNA is the trade association for all 250 newspapers in the state, from our largest member, the Star Tribune, to our smallest, the Hanska Herald, with circulation of 197. MNA also represents online only news organizations. These days, we may all get our news delivered to us in different ways than we did 30 years ago, but Minnesotans still look to local news media, especially local newspapers and broadcasters, for their news. However, the landscape for our local news organizations has changed. Our newspapers are facing significant challenges. So the Newspaper Association has been talking to policymakers and others in the community about potential policy strategies to support local news. This proposal, it's a recommendation from the Illinois Local Journalism Task Force, was one idea that received bipartisan support and interest. A similar requirement has been adopted in New York City, Chicago, and is being considered in several other states. The bill does two things. It requires that 50% of existing state agency paid advertising be spent with local news organizations, and it provides for transparency about how advertising dollars are spent by state agencies through annual reporting. The bill does not intend to micromanage state agencies or impede their marketing goals. We understand they need flexibility to spend their advertising dollars to achieve their intended purposes. State agencies that contract with advertising agencies and marketing firms would still be allowed to do that. Language in the author's amendment makes that clear. We support the important work that all of our state agencies do, and we support their advertising. We just want to see if a portion of that can be spent in Minnesota news organizations. Informed citizens are essential to the health of society and government. Reliable information is becoming an endangered resource as local news organizations struggle. This bill is a win-win. It not only provides a boost to Minnesota newspapers and broadcasters, it also helps get important information out to Minnesotans in every community and corner of our state. We want to thank especially Senator Mae Quaid for her leadership and staunch support for journalism and local newspapers. We hope you will join her in supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Executive Director Hills. Looks like we have Mr. Matt McMillan. Please state your name for the record and you may begin.
Mr. Chair and committee members, good afternoon. My name is Matt McMillan. I am CEO of Press Publications, a Minnesota family-owned newspaper and printing company with community newspapers and a printing plant in some of your districts, including, I brought along copies, Vadnais Heights Press, the White Bear Press, Quad Community Press serving Centerville, Circle Pines, Llano Lakes, and Lexington, Isani, Chisago County Star, and the North Oaks News, and a few others. My comments today hopefully match perfectly with state and local government committee. This bill makes sure a portion of the state agency advertising dollars are spent in state and local businesses without costing any additional money. It is bipartisan and it supports jobs across Minnesota. You've heard the slogan, buy local. Well, this bill's slogan should be buy local ads. It's no secret Minnesota newspapers compete with a large out-of-state companies like Google for ad revenue, and those companies have changed the landscape of local news. With this bill, we're just trying to ensure that a meaningful portion of our state advertising buys are spent in our hometown newspapers and broadcast stations, because this helps support Minnesota jobs and Minnesota communities. The company I manage has 86 employees in Minnesota. We have 6 newspaper offices in the state and a printing plant in Cambridge, Minnesota. Our company and our employees pay taxes here. We shop locally, which creates the circle of economic life in the state. Senate File 2600 isn't a charitable bill. Ads placed in local newspapers are great investments. According to polling of state residents, more than 8 out of 10 Minnesota adults read print and digital newspapers, and 8 out of 10 believe ads in local newspapers are important. Because of our strong bond with readers, ads from state agencies will get extra attention and results they don't get from other sources. Most newspapers in the state have the number one busiest website in their community and the number one highest traffic social media following. There's a reason for that. Readers want local news and ads. Mr. Chair and committee members, we believe putting half of the state ad spend into state and local businesses is one of the easiest yeses you'll have this session. We ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McMillian. I would like to open up to the committee members. If you have questions or comments, Senator Gustafson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much, Senator McQuaid, for bringing this bill forward, and welcome to my press pubs. I literally had the Badness Heights Press in my briefcase, bag, whatever, here. I knew you were coming. I didn't know. I forgot it was today. I just grabbed this because it was in my driveway this morning. So really great paper. Most of those cities you listed are my cities, so I appreciate the work that you do. If you have room for a co-author, I'd love to join it. And I just thank you for your service. I talk with people all the time, other senators who represent different parts of Minnesota who don't have local papers. And we, in my district, not only do I have one, but we have just about one for almost every of my nine cities, not quite, but almost. It definitely covers my entire district. And I always tell people that the local paper is probably read more in our community than the Star Tribune. And so I know how vital it is. I know how the service you provide. I want to thank you for continuing to hold on to that local paper and coverage. And just thank you for everything you do. So appreciate what you do for our community.
Thank you, Senator Gustafson. Any other members with questions or comments? Senator Swadzinski, then Senator Crane.
Well, the two Soul Studies teachers on the committee are going to sing the praises of the press. And so I know you guys are struggling, and it's just hard times. And I just thank you and all of your journalists for the work that you do to educate your respective communities. I do have one question. But before I ask it, I just love that the masthead for the Washington Post says democracy dies in darkness, and I really truly believe that. And as a Soul Studies teacher on a daily basis, I held up this, at that time, well, the Star Tribune, you know, and just said, what are we going to talk about in today's paper? And without those newspapers to educate our youth and all of us, I just don't know. Democracy dies in darkness. So thank you for the role you play. It's not about just the three branches of government. As you guys know, it's the fourth branch as well, and that's you guys. So thanks. But I got to ask, what's the smallest community in Minnesota that has a newspaper? What, I didn't catch the name of the town.
Hanska Herald. Ms. Hills.
The newspaper is the Hanska Herald. And it's 197 circulation. It's owned by a family, a local family.
Can you say
Senator
the name
Swadzinski.
Or spell it
Hanska,
for me?
Hanska. H.
Ms. Hills.
Yes. H-A-N-S-K-A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Senator Curran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator McQuaid. So 50%. Is stated to be dedicated to the local news. How much do we spend today in all of our state agencies?
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cran, I actually don't know that. I don't know if each department, when they submit, I'll give you an example. I had a bill to allow adoptees to access their original birth records. And in that I appropriated I think it was like $100,000 or something like that to do a public awareness campaign. That's one way that we give money to agencies to do advertising campaigns. Then there's totally different things like posting jobs or alerting people about a public health thing. And that's not always like a line item. And so I actually don't know off the top of my head, I don't know if we actually report it anywhere in state government, the amount that we spend on advertising. So I think that's one of the pieces we might learn.
Yeah, maybe we might have, Senator Curran, we might have a testifier that can provide some information for us. Please state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sarah Strong on behalf of the Minnesota Newspaper Association. Senator McQuaid is exactly right. Most agencies, from what we've been able to find, don't necessarily have a line item in the budget. You can't just go on MFB's website and see it. There are certain ones, like the Minnesota Lottery, Explore Minnesota, who advertising is at the core of their mission, and they do have that pretty easily displayed in their reports. The report required in this bill is to try to help get at that information so we can see the report doesn't include where the funds are coming from. I mean, one way or another, they're coming from you all, but it would require the agencies to provide you and the public with information about how those dollars are being spent and the percent that goes into local news organizations and the actual recipients of them. So part of the goal of the bill is to provide that transparency so everyone is clear on how it's spent.
Senator Curran.
Yeah, thank you for the follow-up. The reason I ask is then how does everybody know that this will be beneficial and that would actually solve a problem? If we don't know, everybody just testified favorably on it. It's something, but no one knows what something is. So it perplexes me that we are so excited when we don't even know what we spend today. It sounds good, but then how did we determine 50% of the dollars should be used in those mediums and locally relative to the changing? And the reason I ask it is that we got 50% in here, yet we have a very dynamic world of communication. I think all of us agree we have more methods to communicate today than ever in the history of mankind, and we have fewer methods to communicate effectively than ever in the history of mankind, and to touch everybody, right? And so I see it set at 50%. There's no sunset. There's no reevaluation period to understand what we look for if it does move forward to change the dynamics. But in this case, many agencies spent their monies where they deemed they would get the greatest value, maybe good or bad. I don't know. But today now we move that we're mandating it. So that moves into a subsidy, right? And so I've struggled with the old Star Tribune and Pioneer Press. I'm a city guy. I love the two-a-days. We probably got better information back when we had two-a-day newspapers and embedded reporters in agencies than we have anything today. We don't have a single thing that we have a reporter or an entity that is embedded within a government entity, the fourth, the state, right, that had that accountability. So we don't have any of those things anymore. And what I wonder then, so when I look at our biggest newspapers, Star and Tribune and Pioneer Press, do those qualify as these dedicated guaranteed dollars? Are they entities that would be qualified for this?
Senator McQuaid or one of the testifiers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first thing I'll say, Senator Cran, is you're right. We don't have anything today like we used to have. And part of the reason for that is the way in which ad revenue has dried up to local news organizations in favor of, you know, global companies who advertise to us through every means. And so I'll also just say, too, that part of the benefit of having local news, right, like if I turned on Care 11 tonight and watch the news, it's very unlikely that they're going to report on like the biggest thing that happened in my district, right? Which Eastview High School girls basketball 1/3, and it's great, but like that's not really a news story that like the rest of the state needs to know about. It's so important to me. It's so important to my community. It's so important to those girls who did so great all season, and local news not only helps, you know, us know about what's going on in our community, but it's been shown to help prevent outbreaks, like disease outbreaks, because you know about it sooner and it gets reported sooner. And so that's why this is so important. And so, yes, the Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press and the bigger papers would obviously be part of it, but so would the Hanska Herald, and so would the Sun This Week, and so would the folks in
White Bear
and Chisago and Isanti County, because I did hear that too. You know, I think it just requires us to be really targeted with how do we want to reach Minnesotans, because Minnesotans are reading their local papers if they survive. And right now they're not surviving. And so this is one thing that we can do to make sure that we have this transparency, to have this reporting, to have this local news that is important to our constituents.
Mr. Chair?
Yep. Senator
McQuaid. Yeah, and we've seen the change, and I think there's a huge demand, you know, over 65. They still think papers, right? Papers are the primary, and even the newscast, because they think it's news. And so even I've had this with former Commissioner Grove over at the Star Tribune. It's also the content of the product, not just the means and the delivery and the methodology. And so I always ask them, don't you want to sell to everybody? Right? Ask, right? Businesses, from a business perspective about politics and all those things, I'd never ask a business, right, to get politics, and it's like, stay out of it, both sides. And but in our newspapers, it's been the product, I think, is part of that issue. And it's biased in many cases. And we've got papers that represent my district. And so there's a great demand for good reporting. Today, I think I mentioned before the scenario of being embedded. Yes, the dynamics, I think, changed that. But they had good information. Today, even from a government perspective, even if when you're trying to do the right thing, you don't have information available because they won't comply. Even when you do make requests, investigative reporting and things that are most meaningful. And And on the other side is that now you're in a public subsidy world, and should that reporting change, and should that reporting be just report the information and be unbiased in its nature? And for me, we don't see that, not in my own area. And so in Star Tribune, same thing. The quality of the product matters. And so they should want to sell to everybody. Everybody says they do, but the headlines don't reflect that. And so I think when you look and now you're saying they have a subsidy, not that they weren't spending money with them, right? But now we're mandating that 50% is there. And I want the local part too, but we gotta figure out a way to that the stories reflect the real value in the news that people want. That's part of it. And so I think there's changing technologies, but now that it's a public subsidy, we would hope that maybe the reporting would change.
Mr. Chair?
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Senator Curran, I'll say a few things. One, even though we do have newspapers up here, if you look at how we're defining local news organization, it's print, digital, hybrid, broadcast, or radio station. I can think off the top of my head some incredible reporting that has driven conversations here at this legislature. I think about the use of solitary confinement that I believe KSTP did. Star Tribune just did a series on the PFAS that they found in products that we banned that should have gone into effect January 1 this year. We've had local, really small, local papers break things open about school districts or employees of school districts. The water quality, these are really important things. The second thing I'll say is that at no point would I consider this a subsidy. This is already advertising dollars that agencies are spending, and I don't want reporting to change. I want it to exist. I want to make sure that we have local news reporting, whether that is print or broadcast or radio or digital. And I don't think that making sure that we are keeping our advertising dollars in our local businesses should, could, or would change the reporting. I think that reporting that we get out of the local news in the state, even when it's hard-hitting, I think it's fair. Obviously, a lot of work and rigor went into collecting evidence and quotes and running it through editors. Even when we don't like it, I think it's important that it exists. And I will say that very clearly right here. That tomorrow, every paper that is represented by the folks who came up to this table could run the worst story about me on the front page, and I would still be for this bill because it deserves to exist, and we need it to exist in the state.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Crane.
Senator McQuaid, this is a chance going forward. I think it should absolutely have it's got the reporting piece, but it should be a required reevaluation at 2 year, 3 year, whatever. As we move forward, because the times are changing, and that's created the problem, some part of the problem. But I think we have to really look and figure out, is it making a difference? And again, I think the quality of the product is as equally as important. And so if we're advertising and it's floating products that aren't able to float on their own, and I just think we should be looking at it. Or maybe I'll figure out if there's an amendment later to, not today, but as you move on, about some type of, not a sunset, but a reevaluation period. Thank you.
Certainly. Thank you, Senator Curran. Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will just note, Senator Curran, that because the chairs and ranking minority members of the committees with jurisdiction over state and local government get a report, that would be our opportunity to reevaluate. You know, every session we have the opportunity to look at laws, but we'll be getting reports so we will know how it's going.
Thank you, Senator McQuaid. Senator Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am a member of that over 65 crowd, by the way.
I'm not.
I'm sorry, this has nothing to do with anything you guys, but I just wanted to ask, you know, when I miss City Pages, I miss The Reader, and when I'm up in Duluth, they have this great alternative newspaper filled with ads. And so they're able to provide this free newspaper at a variety, you know, at establishments that it's there, so you can find out what's going on in the Twin Ports and an alternative news, so to speak. And And I'm not looking for an answer, but if any of you ever walk by my office and you're just roaming the halls and you have an insight into how can Duluth, Minnesota provide the Twin Ports with a free weekly newspaper, I'd love to know how, and it's filled with ads, and so they somehow are pulling that off, and so are you, evidently. So, but if you ever walk by my office and want to share the 2 cents, I'd love to be filled in more about that particular issue. And I know it's nothing to do with what you're testifying today, but it is a wonderful newspaper that the Twin Ports has up there. And anyways, I can't believe the Twin Cities can't support such another alternative newspaper that, anyways, thanks for indulging me, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Swadzinski. You made any responses?
thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Swadzinski. I will say we do have some wonderful free papers in the Twin Cities. One of them is the Minnesota Women's Press, and it's wonderful. And I don't say that because I was once on the cover of it many years ago for buying a house as a single woman.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Many, many years ago. I'm no longer a single woman. It's a great point, and I know Lisa Hills, who is up here with me often, we do walk by your office, and we are always happy to come talk to you about newspaper issues. We, as you know, we don't hesitate. We are in touch often, but your point is well taken, but it is ads. That's the lifeblood of these newspapers, and so I just want to reiterate Senator May Quaid's comments on the subsidy piece, too. I think we feel strongly that this is not a subsidy. You're paying for a product. The goal of this bill is to ensure that our agencies are taking into consideration that they have at their fingertips local news media with massive reach and often very competitive ad pricing. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Swadzinski.
Thank you. And just like outside the Rathskeller in the Capitol, there's that big wooden, beautiful, at one time filled with free weekly, daily newspapers. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they'll ever come back. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I know they're still here. But it'd be nice maybe someday to see those racks filled again with information that people can grab a copy of the Women's Press or whatever might be available someday. But I don't know if that day will ever come back. But it's over 65 guy can fantasize about it or whatever. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Senator Swadzinski. Seeing no further discussion, Senate File 2600, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator McQuaid. Next, we will revert back to Senate File 2236. Senator Gustafson, are you ready to go? Welcome to the State and Local Government Committee. Senator Gustafson, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and members. SF-2236 is an agency bill for the Office of Administrative Hearings. This bill makes 3 key changes that promote clarity and justice. First, this bill would change OAH's name to the Court of Administrative Hearings. This change reflects OAH's growth over the past few years and clarifies the agency's role in involved parties, or for involved parties, I'm sorry. Second, this bill sets forth a process by which agencies may return to a matter to OAH. Under this bill, an agency would have 45 days to request such a return from the Chief Administrative Law Judge. This ensures fairness and justice for all involved. And third, SF-2236 repeals 2 campaign complaint claims of action that have been identified by higher courts as not constitutional. So thank you for hearing this bill. I'm joined today by Abigail Rankin, Associate General Counsel of the Office of Administrative Hearings.
Thank you, Senator Gustafson. Associate General Counsel Rankin, do we call you General Rankin to
Ms. Rankin
to your testimony?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, I'd just like to again add a little bit more detail to this bill. The first provision changes our name to the Court of Administrative Hearings, as the Senator noted, which reflects our growth as an independent place within the executive branch where people come to resolve their disagreements. This change also reflects the same naming conventions and enacting terminology as the other executive branch courts, which are the Tax Court and the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. The second component of this bill, the remand provision, arises from a collaborative drafting process with agency general counsel representatives and codifies an opportunity for remand when such action protects due process. Remand means, of course, to send a case back to the court for further action. And the opportunities codified in this bill include if a commissioner rejects a grant of summary disposition, if a party who procedurally defaults seeks to participate and would like to return the case to the OAH, following remand from the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court, or if there is an identification of a mathematical or clerical error that requires further proceedings before OAH. And there's also an as justice requires provision that allows the Chief Administrative Law Judge to grant remand as justice requires, aside from those preceding conditions. Finally, the bill repeals claims of action that have been identified by the Eighth Circuit as unconstitutional. These are not surprises. One of the findings was in 2005, one was in 2014. This is just cleaning up the statutes to ensure that the citizens are aware of what claims they may bring before OAH and to make it easier for them to get the correct claim on the first try. Thank you for hearing this bill. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Senator Gustafson, did you also have an amendment? Was it the A1?
No, I don't.
There's no amendment, right? Okay, thank you. Senator Gustafson, members of the committee, have any questions or comments on Senate File 2236? Seeing no further discussion, Senator Gustafson, you have any final comments?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, seeing no further discussion, Senate File 2236 is recommended to pass and re-referred to elections. That's its next stop. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say no. Motion passes. Thank you, Senator Gustafson. And now we will be moving forward to Senator Carlson's bills, Senate File 1737. Senator Carlson, welcome to your committee. Whenever you're ready, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have Senate File 1737 for your consideration. 1737 is a rather simple MMB agency bill that updates the due date for the report on uncollectible debt. It makes a one-month change in that in the debt. And with me is, I'm joined by MMB Legislative Director Eric Anderson to help explain any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson, any testimony for us today on this bill?
Sure. Thank you again. For the record, Eric Anderson, MMB Legislative Director. Just some additional context that this report was established in 2019. And in our six times producing this report, we've appreciated that we don't have quite as much time as we'd think it would be valuable to get this one submitted. We have come to the experience that we are not just having a couple weeks to deal with the data as it comes in from our agency partners in producing this summary, and it's at a time of the year when the relevant staff are also putting in long hours on other work. So I'd appreciate the additional few weeks to get this one submitted in the best shape that we can.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Members of the committee, any questions or comments on Senate File 1737? Seeing none, any final comments, Senator Carlson?
No, thank you for considering it. Like you say, it's a very simple agency bill.
All right, thank you. Senate File 1737 is laid over for possible inclusion. All right, Senator Carlson, Senate File 2856.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
Senator
members,
Carlson.
I have Senate File 2856, which is another agency bill, and it allows the payments to be terminated to program participants under certain circumstances where there's a suspicion of fraud. And with that, I have Ms. Brita Rattan from the MMB. She's deputy commissioner, and she'll help explain the bill.
No, welcome. Deputy Commissioner, please state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and committee members, and thank you, Senator Carlson, for authoring this proposal. I'm Brita Rattan, Deputy Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. So this proposal is one of a number of proposals from the administration this session to better equip state agencies with the resources and tools they need to better detect fraud, take action, investigate, and hold fraudsters accountable. I want to just say at the top, fraud against public programs is unacceptable. It's not a victimless crime, and it harms the same people we're trying to help with these services. And as financial stewards of public funds, we take fraud and misuse of public resources very seriously and are committed to safeguarding public funds. So this Senate file seeks to add new authority across state agencies to quickly withhold payments when there is a credible allegation of fraud. With this authority, agencies will have more consistent authority to assess, pause, and investigate their own payments to persons who are suspected of defrauding their agency or other agencies, and removing some existing roadblocks that exist in current law to share that information across agencies and approach fraud on an enterprise-wide basis. So under this authority, payments must only resume if the agency later becomes satisfied that there is no fraud occurring or at the end of legal proceedings related to the alleged fraud. And data provisions not only allow for the disclosure of active investigation data to law enforcement, but also permits that sharing across other state, local, or federal agencies if that data sharing would help prevent fraud or otherwise assist the law enforcement process. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, any questions or comments to the author or the testifier? Senator Coran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Rattan, these are great measures. It could have been done 4 or 5 years ago. They're all good. We should have been doing this forever. Like I said earlier, when there's similar policies, we want them executed. And much of this sounds good, but we had the opportunity to execute, and our agencies have to perform at a much higher level, not just those areas that fall into and are definable as that theft or misuse of services. And we still haven't sat down to talk about how we retrain our workforce, especially now that they're not even in an office. That still has to be done. And none of those initiatives are included or even talked about from the governor's perspective. It's a knee-jerk reaction to his voters finally found out about the fraud because he was on some nationwide tour. And so it's good it's here, but it's still not comprehensive, and it still won't solve the problem based on the structure in which you guys have put forward, or the governor's put forward, and are trying to sell Minnesotans. Our Office of the Inspector General proposals, a truly independent office, will likely provide a much better opportunity to make sure that pathways to prosecute or notify and investigate fraud are not interrupted by agency heads within the same entities. And so, much like the earlier one was, I forget who had it, talking about the chain of command of who and when suspicion of fraud must occur. That's where we have the challenge. Every one of us gets a whole host of whistleblowers, and that communicate with us when they've been impeded from being able to do the very things that you list here or in the previous bills. So they're good. We want to see it, but we also want to see it executed upon. And so we would love to, at some point, have the governor acknowledge that we must endure and enter into that mission, because if not, our IT doesn't get better, our fraud doesn't get, right, the use of our services and make sure it goes to the most vital people in Minnesota, that it's actually done. And so we share in the goal, or at least it's stated. I just don't see it being holistic in the nature of how we can accomplish it. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Curran. Commissioner Raton, could you provide with us sort of like, you know, what are sort of the internal checks or reporting on, like, you know, how, if these were to be implemented, how do we know how it's doing without the OLA or us getting involved, right, Commissioner?
So, Senator Zhang, certainly when a fraud allegation is, you know, fully adjudicated, that information is public. During the investigation process, it would not be public. I believe admin is here that could talk more about the data classification during an actual fraud investigation. But I think that's, frankly, one of the difficulties is that when an investigation is ongoing, that information is not public.
Thank you, Commissioner. And members, any additional questions or comments on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Carlson, any final words?
None that would add more to it other than just discussion. Yes, the head of any state agency that is given that ability to withhold payments, and if the program is a program that's administered by that agency, if the agency head determines there is a credible allegation of fraud, the program participant is the subject of an investigation. So it's a good way to provide a path to get investigations going.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. With seeing no further discussion, Senate File 2856 is laid over for possible inclusion. And with that, the State and Local Government Committee is adjourned. Thank you, members.